What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype Podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by my man, Anthony Slater, who covers the Golden State Warriors for The Athletic. And we're going to break down a big offseason ahead for the Warriors. We've got Draymond Green's free agency. We'll take a look at the Jordan Poole for Chris Paul trade, Klay Thompson potential extension talks. There's always chatter about Jonathan Kuminga's future and trade talks that we could talk about. The end of the Bob Myers era and the start of the Mike Dunleavy era. Maybe we'll sprinkle a little intel on my paisan Dante DiVincenzo and much more. Anthony, I appreciate you joining me as always, brother. How's everything your way this offseason?
Very good. Busy. I mean, you mentioned a busy offseason ahead. I mean, I feel like the Warriors already, their big ticket item was checked off in a lot of ways with that, Jordan Poole for Chris Paul trade on, right before the draft, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I think, first of all, I don't think there's going to be a bigger acquisition in the Warriors community other than you having a kid. Congratulations to you. That's a big thing. God bless. It's tough to get sleep as it is during free agency. This is right up your alley this time. You will be well prepared, my friend. Congrats to you on that.
Appreciate it. I signed up for it.
There you go. That's a long-term lifetime contract,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, it is max deal.
I mean, well, speaking of long-term deals, we've got Draymond Green who opted out and is going to be an unrestricted free agent coming up shortly here. And from what I've heard, the Warriors are optimistic about re-signing Draymond Green. League source told Hoops Hype. I'm curious from your standpoint, if there's a range you think that he can have and a number of years with Golden State or somewhere else. I know I have a ballpark idea in my mind, but you're there on the ground every day. So I will certainly defer to you on this one.
Yeah, look, 3 years has been the conversation really from the beginning. That lines up with Steph Curry's, current contract, obviously, and it just gives Draymond Green a level of security. I think when he did opt out, or at least, make it clear he plans to opt out, it told you that he at least felt he had a market that was somewhere near the $27.6 million that he declined for next season, for multiple years, that three-year deal we're talking about. And you mentioned ballpark. I think that's where the haggling might be at this point, which is, I think the Warriors would like to trim that down because, look, we all know this, but every million the Warriors save is, seven, eight, nine extra million in tax, with their crazy bill. So as much as they can shave it down, they'd like to. As much as Draymond Green can bump it up, he'd like to. I think his exterior market, there's been several Western Conference playoff contenders, rivals out there that have at least sniffed around on it that probably will help bump Draymond's number up. But all signs continue to point to him returning to the Warriors. I mean, he was adamant, postseason right after the series that he wanted to be back. The Warriors, from Steve Kerr to Mike Dunleavy, have come out and said, we're not championship contenders if he does not return. And then, as we all know, actions speak louder than words in this league. And at this time of year, there are, certain moves that indicate what might be coming when free agency happens. Hey, this guy, declined a team option. Hey, the Kings made a trade on draft night that gave them this amount of space. Well, to me, the Jordan Poole for Chris Paul move, it was a blinking light. Like Draymond Green, all indications are he's coming back, because you do not make that move. You do not bet on the present if you don't believe, almost know, that Draymond Green is coming back.
I agree with you for sure, Anthony. I think, the stars were aligning on that and the dominoes were falling seemingly in place. You look at, you talked about his player option. I mean, look, I think if he got a multi-year deal in like the $25 million range or something like that, but you're, having that over multiple years, you get that security, maybe something like that. You've heard certainly
three for 80 range, something. That's probably what we're talking, right?
Three for, I mean, that's maybe with some incentives or something, yeah, how they structure this stuff, but that, mm-hmm, that's an interesting thought there. And I mean, I think when you look at some of the teams that have kind of been floated out there, like, look, certainly Mike Brown with Sacramento, I get the wanting to have a reunion, and he ironically would be a guy that I think fit well there on paper, but they've got their sights on other targets as well. There's certainly Kyle Kuzma reported stuff out there. Other than that, you obviously heard some talk previously about like maybe the Pistons because of the location, and Draymond play for Michigan State, but I don't really see that at all. Other than that location fit aspect. And I think there was, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was a report about the Grizzlies that maybe inquired.
Yeah, Mark Stein put that out there. And I've heard similar, but I basically heard when they made the that big Marcus Smart trade, which included, by the way, trading a Warriors first rounder to the Celtics in that deal, that in a lot of ways that ended any Draymond pursuit.
Interesting on that. So, I mean, I think we're both pretty in alignment that Draymond Green comes back to the Warriors at this point. Just makes sense for all sides involved. And, you know, just with this dynasty, I mean, I know everybody talks about, oh, when is the end? When is the end? Because that's what everybody looks forward to, I guess, you know, looking ahead. But to me, they're still a contender. They obviously had a good year last year. They didn't get to the top of the mountain, but the core is still there. And if you're Golden State, given where they were before that, that trio was there, I don't think you should just let it go. So I certainly see them back. You touched on it a little bit too about Jordan Poole being moved and how it was kind of given a little bit of a preview of what's to come probably with Draymond. And, you know, look, when Mike Dunleavy was at the press conference and you tweeted the video of him saying, you know, with his contract extension, we're planning on having him here for 4 more years at least. Nobody around the league really believed that. And sure enough, he was traded, you know, days later, or at least it was agreed to.
Somebody behind the scenes told me, you know, 4 years, how about 4 days? It was 4 days after that comment that he got traded.
Yeah, and everybody knew Golden State had to shed a big salary if it was going to keep the core together. And, you know, Poole was the odd man out. Now, Chris Paul coming in, the fit is interesting because he's not a transition guy as much anymore. More of a half court methodical guy, especially last season with the Suns. So, I mean, I'll say this, Anthony. I think if you're a guy that plays like fantasy basketball or something, you know, you probably take the over on Jordan Poole points with the Wizards next year. He's gonna have a green light like nobody's business and ton of shots, you know, have an opportunity to grow and be the guy, I guess, there, but not on a winning team at this point. They're in a full rebuild, looking to get assets for some of their guys as well. You know, and with Chris Paul coming to the Warriors, how do you see that fit, honestly?
Yeah, so, you know, I think there's been a lot of talk about the idea that he doesn't necessarily fit stylistically. You know, always heavy pick and roll. Warriors are low pick and roll. Like you mentioned, he's not some speedy, you know, jack the ball, you know, get the ball up the court, you know, take a bunch of threes type guy. But I think people forget over the entire Steve Kerr era with, various different title teams, the second unit, the non-Steph Curry minutes, are always very different stylistically. They used to run high post David West, like, you know, hub action. Sean Livingston used to play kind of methodically in that unit. And, you know, Andre Iguodala would be back a point guard at times. And Andrew Bogut, you know, again, kind of playing that David West role. Like, they've had a lot of, you know, veteran, slow it down, methodical type units. I used to call that one that had, it was Livingston, West, Iguodala, and like Ian Clark. We used to call it like the dinosaur unit. They were like older and it was, they would win. Like the Warriors would, you know, this were the Durant Warriors. They would deliver them like a, you know, 40-35 first quarter lead. And then over the next 6 minutes, while Steph sat and often Durant sat too, the score at the end would be like 6-4. You know, they play this like super slow, you know, crank the game down, completely different style. And I mentioned all that to say, like, I think that's what Steve Kerr envisions his second unit next season being. You know, Chris Paul's leading it. Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody maybe will be in it and can benefit from having a traditional point guard, some rim running action for Kuminga. And you can go heavy Chris Paul pick and roll and maybe, you know, spread the floor. Maybe Clay's in that unit to kind of space the floor. I think Steve Kerr has a lot more to play with. And if you know Steve Kerr, he loves himself a traditional point guard. And at times I think he really struggled with the Jordan Poole experience because Jordan Poole fourth in the league in turnovers last season. We know the shot selection. I think it is going to play well in Washington as like a really fun new, you know, semi-star that they're going to have. But I think Steve Kerr in a lot of ways just wanted, as he's called before with Andre Iguodala, a chaperone on the court, essentially.
A chaperone. I like that. And I mean, with Jordan Poole, yeah, once in a while he'd have these moments of like Trae Young-itis, I'll call it, where he was shooting these like deep threes and you could tell like Steph would like, dude, what are you doing? Like,
yeah, the joke was at times that he would take Steph's heat checks, right? It was like, you know, Steph's at two in a row. All right, I'm hot too, you know. But
yeah,
that's Jordan Poole for good and bad, because like he had a lot of good, very good moments for the Warriors, including he was a key part of the title team. But, you know, things went sideways, obviously.
Hey, like Andrew Wiggins and him were saying after, we about to get a bag. And guess what?
They did.
But, you know, you were talking too a little bit about Jonathan Kuminga and how Steve Kerr would use him a little bit and the Chris Paul analysis you were providing there. And, you know, for a bit there, I mean, Jonathan Kuminga drew interest from several teams, including the Indiana Pacers, which those talks, from my understanding, centered mostly around draft pick conversation.
Yeah, seventh pick.
Yeah, and a lot of different stuff out there, different scenarios. So, I mean, if he wasn't getting traded for that, I'm curious a couple things. One, I mean, I've heard like a handful of teams have always called on Jonathan Kuminga, even dating to before the trade deadline. And over the past year, it seems like there are a handful of teams that like him. So what I'm curious of is two things. Who in your estimation around the league really covets Jonathan Kuminga? And do you see him as a Golden State Warrior to start the season?
I mean, you mentioned it, the Pacers clearly have checked in. You know, I know in the past, like, you know, Raptors conversations, we know that the Warriors have checked in on OG Anunoby dating back to the deadline, even this offseason. Our Tim Kalkom, you reported that today, I believe. And it makes sense. Like, who wouldn't want a 6'7", you know, freak athlete wing with some high upside offensively? And he has shown flashes of being, an incredible individual defender. They put him on star, you know, he guards Luka pretty well. They'll have him just pick up Luka full court for 5 minute stretches. And he's a guy who, if you're around the league, you see him out of the rotation in the playoffs, you're thinking, hey, this is a like absolutely perfect buy low candidate in a league that's obsessed with wings. So I think, you know, if we really named who's actually interested in Jonathan Kuminga, probably 17 teams out there, really, you know, some more than others. As far as do I see him on the Warriors next season? Yes, I do not think he's going to be traded. I don't think he was being shopped. I do think the Warriors, you know, and as we're seeing early in the Mike Dunleavy era, are very willing to have any type of conversation you want to have, as long as you're not basically asking for Steph Curry. So he was bandied about in conversation, but they were adamant, you know, even when a report came out that like it sounded as if they were shopping him, you know, high in the draft. They're like, we ain't shopping him. Again, they'll answer the call. They'll answer inbound calls on him. But I truly think, and through the conversations with people behind the scenes about rotations and various roster spots next year, like he is part of the Warriors' plans moving forward. And there is still a belief in the talent. The thing is, it's got to fit. You know, Steve Kerr's got to get him on the floor and they got to find lineup combinations, all that. But he's part of their plans.
One guy who I don't see being a part of Golden State's plans looking ahead, you've got Dante DiVincenzo, who won't return to the Golden State Warriors, I'm told. I mean, look, and it's a good thing for him because, look, he's earned certainly a massive pay raise. He may very much almost double, if not fully double his what he could have got with Golden State. So I can't blame the guy. Look, for my Paisan, there's about a handful of teams interested that are going to be waiting for him around the start of free agency.
Let me ask you, the big one that, you know, seems to be the rumbling seem to be the Knicks. There's a Villanova connection, Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart. I know him. He's very friendly with those two.
Oh, yeah.
They have the mid-level. That seems to be in his ballpark. Is that where you're thinking he might go?
That's certainly one of the handful of teams. But what I would tell you, Anthony, is that when it comes to Dante DiVincenzo, that he's kind of competing in this market for that similar money, I would say, at least when it comes from the mid-level exception teams with Bruce Brown, with maybe a Max Strus. And I think Dante and Bruce have somewhat similar games, somewhat, you know, Bruce has become a better 3-point shooter over the years, but you know, with the Knicks, look, it's always CAA ties for a guy like Bruce, number one. He's a Tom Thibodeau type of guy, but Dante DiVincenzo equally is. Look, you hit on a nail on the head. Look, Jalen Brunson's got a voice with that team. It's his team. And so he obviously loves Dante. My question then would be, if you are going after Dante DiVincenzo and you already have Josh Hart, like, at some point, you've got this surplus of guards there. Like, what are you then going to do with RJ Barrett? What are you going to do with Quentin Grimes? You've got to, in my opinion, break that up. I don't think there's enough minutes to evenly distribute to make them all happy. So I think if Dante DiVincenzo is coming in with the Knicks, then I think there would be another domino that falls. I just can't see all those guys playing together and having fair minute distribution. I can't. They play too much of the same position similarly. So if that does come to fruition, whether it's Dante DiVincenzo or Bruce Brown, then I would look for that next domino to fall for sure. But again, like, Dante's market, certainly, I think it's closer to the non-taxpayer mid-level than the taxpayer mid-level. And that's going to make it interesting for some teams. You know, look, certainly there are some teams out there with cap space that could look at him. But I just think that he's a winner and a guy that would fit better, in my opinion, on a contending team. You saw he played both roles as well as a starter and off the bench with Golden State. The biggest thing teams like about him, from my understanding, is obviously he's a good defender, but really the way he shot the three ball last year, if they can bottle that up around like 40% again, that is highly coveted.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's versatile. You mentioned it. He can play various roles. He's well-liked in the locker room. He did hit the three well last year, off the dribble at times even. He's a kind of a secondary playmaker. He rebounds incredibly well for his position. And you mentioned he wins. He won in college. He's, you know, was on a Bucks team that won the championship, even though obviously he was hurt in the playoffs. And he, you know, was a winning component for the Warriors last year. And the Warriors would have loved to have him back. But, I mean, they knew the deal coming in. They got him on a below market deal, understanding that their hope was he was going to play so well. He played himself out of their market. He did. The most they can pay him, I think, is like $5.6 million. We know that's not happening. So,
yeah. And I mean, look, that's a win-win scenario for the Warriors. You know, when they've won, they found these guys like the Gary Payton, the second, Otto Porter at the time, you know, all these minimum guys. I mean, I know Dante was more than a minimum, but they're going to have to, you know, bottle that success up again and really try to find those guys that are playing on a make good deal and, you know, thrive with them. But I mean, other than that, when I look at the Warriors in the offseason, I mean, look, I think we talked a lot about Draymond Green and him remaining a part of the core. They've also got a looming decision on Klay Thompson and a possible extension down the line. I certainly think, look, Klay wants to remain a Warrior for life. I think that's pretty, well, I mean, do you believe that? I've always gotten
yes,
that vibe.
You know, all things equal, for sure. You know, the decisions get complicated with the second apron, you know, especially if Klay Thompson plays himself into a big payday. It's pretty difficult for the Warriors to stomach a huge Klay Thompson, you know, another huge Klay Thompson contract. I do think the Jordan Poole trade directly, you know, this moment impacts Draymond Green's future and makes it much more likely that Draymond Green was coming back, as we talked about. But I think the longer term, bigger picture, it may have an even more direct impact on Klay Thompson's ability to stay with the Warriors, because by getting off, you know, Jordan Poole's long-term contract, you get Chris Paul in, who has a completely non-guaranteed $30 million next season that can't, you know, it gives them optionality. You can wipe that away. You can, you know, use it in a trade. You can, like I said, if you just let Chris Paul walk, then suddenly there is a lot more room for you to stay under the second apron while, you know, retaining Klay Thompson. Now, as far as an extension goes this summer, Klay Thompson would have to take a, you know, pretty obvious pay cut. He's making $43 million right now. I don't know how low a number we're talking. my expectation is, you know, probably something doesn't get done just because I think Klay Thompson's of the belief. I mean, we all know how confident he is in his ability and his shot making. He could go try to play himself into more money this year because the higher he gets his market, where he can get his market higher with a better season. So I'm not sure they'll necessarily work something out, but I do think the path has been cleared for them to continue their partnership beyond this season.
I could certainly understand that. Look, he definitely does not lack confidence, Clay. I mean, is there a range that you think the Warriors would be looking to get him in as far as, like, I don't know, an annual salary a year? Is that something that you have an idea on?
I would just kind of compare it a little bit to the Andrew Wiggins situation last year. Remember, Wiggins was making like, I don't know, like 31, 33, something like that on the last season, which was last year. And the Warriors, you know, asked him to take an extension that included a pay cut that'll start this upcoming season. I don't have the exact number up, but I think it's in the mid 20 range, like 24, 25 ish. I don't know. You know, I don't think the Warriors have advanced to actually talking numbers with Clay because there's so much other stuff at play. They're just installed a new GM, the Draymond Green future, the Jordan Poole trade. But if I'm just like, you know, throwing, you know, loose numbers out there, I would think the Andrew Wiggins extension type numbers. Go look at what the contract he signed. That seems somewhat reasonable for what Clay, you know, is still giving as a shooter. He led the NBA and made threes last year.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on it with the new GM. So when you look at the Bob Myers era and the end of it, I guess a couple thoughts for me come to mind. One, I mean, how do you, I guess, summarize it? But also, were you a little bit shocked that at this point it was curtains for Bob Myers in Golden State and stepping away for a little bit?
To your question, no. I mean, we were reporting it all season. I mean, all the vibes behind the scenes were this is, you know, probably the swan song. He was really kind of contemplating his future. There was a gap in the money, you know, the compensation, at least in the initial, you know, offer from Joe Lacob and what Bob Myers believed he was worth. But, you know, by the end, it wasn't a money thing. And, he, you know, he said it publicly, but there was a little burnout on the job, which, you know, this dates back several years. I mean, it's a more than a decade tenure he had, four titles, a lot of big, crazy moments. I mean, going back to those 2019 finals with the KD Achilles tear, the Klay Thompson ACL. So how would I look at his tenure? I mean, he's one of the most successful executives ever. Hometown team. He's a kid from Danville. It was kind of a surprising hire at the time. When you go back, they got him out of the agent world and he built incredible, you know, behind the scenes relationships. I think he was about as good as I can ever imagine a GM at that job being an actual manager of, you know, egos, players, whatever you want to call it. And that worked in, you know, getting the Andre Iguodala sign and trade done, which was a difficult one. He is considered the main reason that Kevin Durant actually made that move. That's one of the best free agent signings in NBA history. He maintains probably a better relationship with Kevin Durant today than anybody from the Warriors. And then, you know, I think the Andrew Wiggins and Kuminga for D'Angelo Russell trade was a kind of a stroke of genius that got them that fourth title. So, I mean, again, like I said, one of the best executives ever.
To your point, I think Bob Myers was one of the first successful agent to executive guys in the league. And I think it further helped open the door for other people to come after him, such as, for example, a Rob Pelinka. Now with Mike Dunleavy, you know, I've always got the meme queued up of him with the Chicago Bulls on the bench, like looking at the camera, nodding. I had a quote tweet that with the Jordan Poole trade after he made that move. But I mean, when you look at Mike Dunleavy, how could things maybe be done differently now in Golden State with him in the head chair? What is different maybe about him than Bob?
I just think the main difference for Mike coming in is like their situations. I mean, if Bob stayed in the job, this is such a transitional phase for a, you know, you know, fading dynasty core that's, you know, still wants to win as much as possible, kind of needs to make more all-in moves. Bob Myers was always an extremely patient GM, calculated, and not that Mike Dunleavy won't be. They have very similar personalities. They're incredibly good friends. Bob Myers brought Mike Dunleavy into the organization, but I just think, as you've seen with Mike so far, I mean, he's coming at it in at a time that aggressiveness is needed, and he's pulled the trigger early on some pretty big moves. As far as my biggest question about Mike Dunleavy, I think he's going to, he's very sharp. If you talk to him, he's got incredible connections across the league. Obviously he did a 15-year playing career. He grew up around the league because of his dad. His dad was a player coach GM. But my biggest question with Dunleavy compared to Bob Myers is the relationship stuff. Like, as I said, Bob Myers put out fires behind the scenes for a decade and was insanely good at doing it. You know, so what happens this season when the first Draymond Green incident pops up, when the first, you know, when there is kind of tension between coaching staff and the ownership group about, you know, young players playing time, stuff like that. That is what Bob Myers was best at. And we don't know on Mike Dunleavy yet on the, you know, on that front.
Well, the time will tell on that, but I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what moves Mike has up his sleeve, and I'm looking forward to seeing your coverage of the Warriors on The Athletic, brother. You always do a great job, very thorough and detailed, and I appreciate you taking some time to join me and break down a busy offseason ahead for Golden State, brother.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, man. I also want to thank everybody else for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, coaches, executives, and media members such as Anthony Slater, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're giving my man Anthony a follow too. He's at Anthony V. Slater. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.